All right, so we just heard Kurt Nikisch talk about one thing that Atlanta did not invest in when it hosted the Olympics, and that's public transit. Olympic supporters here in Boston say, hey, we could do things differently. If we had the Olympics, we could potentially invest that in the MBTA, which is in dire need of some help. So we have a very special guest in the studio to talk about transportation overall with us. She's Stephanie Pollack, Massachusetts Secretary of Transportation. It's a job she began in January of 2015.
And that was just 1 month before the region was buried underneath record-breaking snowfall, crippling commuter rail, and the MBTA.
And of course, there has been a great deal of discussion since then about how to fix the T and about the vision for transportation in Massachusetts in the 21st century in general. We want to talk about all of that and take your questions for the secretary as well. So call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Secretary Stephanie Pollack, welcome to the show, and it's great to have you.
Great to be here.
So, you know, I started covering transportation for WBUR back in 2007, and when I was making my early rounds trying to get a lay of the land, everybody said, you have to talk to Stephanie Pollack, because she's one of the people who knows more than anything. So there's a lot to cover here, but let's just start directly with the T and the latest news on proposed reforms there, specifically the fiscal control board that has been proposed. I mean, there's a lot of discussion on what shape the control board would take, what powers it would have and wouldn't have. So let's just hit you. Let's just start with the latest question about the fact that the Carmen's Union says that they oppose the control board because they would not have rights under binding arbitration with the fiscal control board. Your response to that?
So what we've proposed at the recommendation of an expert panel that Governor Baker convened is a fiscal control board that would really be able to focus on the T and accelerate the rate of change and get that agency fixed once and for all. One piece of an interrelated set of reforms is the idea that this board, this control board, should be able to approve the dollar amount of collective bargaining agreements before they're automatically incorporated into the budget, the same way that city and town councils in Massachusetts do for police and firemen. So they still get to be, still have collective bargaining rights, they still go to binding arbitration, but as a last step after an arbitrator's award, before you just write the check and start paying, we feel that that is essential to make sure that the T can close its operating deficit.
Okay. And so what about another proposal, this from House and Senate lawmakers, that would temporarily suspend a state law that prohibits the T from hiring, say, outside contractors unless the T can prove that those contractors would save the system money?
So there are a lot of restrictions on the MBTA now in terms of its ability to use contracting out jobs, which would stay in Massachusetts, as one tool in the toolkit to provide people the transit services they need. We're not talking about privatizing all the buses, privatizing all the trains, but we need more flexibility so that when we don't have the bandwidth to do the things we need to do, we have the option of going to the private sector and hiring Massachusetts companies and Massachusetts workers to get the job done.
Mm, okay. Now, what about fare increases? Are they on the table?
Fare increases, we think, need to be modest and regular, but we think the 5% absolute cap, we can only go up 5% every other year, is too tight. And we need a fare structure that balances the need to have the T's revenue so that it can provide great service. Well aware, we don't want to scare away riders. We don't want to hurt low-income people. So it's a balancing act. We would just like to do that balancing act without an absolute limit of only being able to increase fares 5% every other year.
Okay, so what's the middle ground there, though? Because the 5% every other year rule came in after there was a lot of upset amongst riders when, you know, the old rule was the T could propose a fare increase kind of whenever it wanted and however much it wanted. So we were seeing at times double-digit percentage increases that were really tough on people.
No, and the way that the T would sort of wait and wait and wait until it became a crisis and then propose either giant fare increases or slashing service or both was definitely not what we're trying to go back to. The idea that they need to be regular, the idea that they need to be modest, the idea that we need to be equitable, all of that remains. The T board needs to do a fare policy, and that fare policy would outline all of that. And there's lots of ways we can make sure that the new legislation addresses those concerns. But at the end of the day, It may well be that a different fare structure and slightly higher fares can deliver the service people want and need.
Hmm. Now, what about service cuts? I mean, we're kind of going through a laundry list of all the possibilities we could see as riders coming forward in the are more service cuts a likelihood in the future?
I hope not, but what I do hope is that what we do is service planning. The MBTA, it has been years since they really took a hard look at the system. So the first step in that process, we're just getting underway, which is actually, what are our service standards? How crowded should our trains be? What should our on-time goals be? Once you have a set of goals for service, then you can look at the service you're providing and say, are we meeting our goals? And if we're not, how do we change the routes around? So it's not about cutting service. It's actually about planning service so that we meet people's needs.
Okay, so is that people's current needs or what we anticipate needs being 15, 20, 30 years from now?
So it's actually both, and that's what's interesting. The T is not doing as well as it could today in meeting needs. And of course, we also need to be thinking about 10 years, 15 years, 25 years from now, when Boston will be as different in the year 2040 from now as it is from 1990, right? We're 25 years since 1990. If you think about the world today and the world in 1990, so many things have changed in Boston. Well, that's going to be true 25 years from now. So we want to get into that discussion too. But the bottom line is, we got to fix the agency, because the same agency is going to deliver transit to people 25 years from now, and it's got to work better than the T of today does.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm asking all these sort of nitty gritty questions because, I mean, the T's financial situation is dire. I mean, there have been multiple reports. I mean, you've even authored some of them in years past about the state of the MBTA, and I'm seeing these are numbers from 2013, sort of anticipating what the budget gaps would be. And they're saying by fiscal year 2018, that the budget gap for the T would be $357 million, if I'm reading that right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's only, 2-3 years from now? It's a huge amount of money. So, and that's just to provide the service that we have today.
Transit is always going to be a public good that has to be subsidized by the taxpayers. The taxpayers of Massachusetts already guarantee nearly $1 billion a year of subsidy of the T's $2 billion budget. So this is not a conversation about saying we shouldn't subsidize the T. That said, it can't be a blank check. Transit's really important, but so are all the other things state government does. We think, and the expert panel that the governor convened says, that there are ways to close that operating deficit, and we are going to pursue those.
Does your boss agree with that? I mean, Governor Baker has said no new taxes.
Governor Baker has said no new taxes. The expert panel has said a combination of really focusing on generating revenue from assets the T owns, like its real estate, controlling costs, and continuing to get state money for helping pay its debt service can close the gap, and that's what we're focused on.
Mm. So let's take a quick step back here, because I'm curious, when the weather disaster befell the region and befell the MBTA and commuter rail, for that matter, what was it like what was your day-to-day like as that was unfolding? I mean, what were you experiencing, seeing, thinking? How was that experienced by Stephanie Pollack?
Well, you mentioned that I had been thinking and writing and researching transportation for a long time before I became secretary. And, I thought I came into the job knowing a fair amount about what happened on the inside, and watching from the inside the day-to-day operational challenges, what was happening. And yes, we all saw some of the worst of what happens when the system fails. But I did also get to see some of the best of people who rose to the occasion, people on the highway side helping dig out the bus stops so that the MBTA could run shuttle bus services, people really stepping up. And so the weather didn't cause the T to be a dysfunctional agency. The weather was a stress test that the MBTA failed. If it didn't fail that stress test, another one would have come along. So in a way, it's a blessing that so earlier in our administration, when we have the running room to get stuff done and really fix the T, which is what we're committed to doing, we've got the time to do that. And the other thing I will say that's been interesting is couple years ago, we thought everybody was going to focus on the T during the 2013 legislative session, and all the advocates and the governor and the legislatures were all into it. But if you looked at public polling, people didn't sort of put fixing the transportation system or the T very high on their list. And if you look at polling now, that's changed. And so I really think, while it's not what I would have wanted when I became secretary, what happened this winter has really opened the conversation. Somehow not having your transit system there, literally closing the doors, gives people a view of how important it is that maybe they didn't have before.
Do you think that that same sense of urgency is still felt amongst legislators now that we're in June? I mean, riders still feel that same sense of urgency. But I'm only asking because I don't want to be a cynic about this.
Yep.
I really don't. But it's hard not to be because the conversations about the MBTA have been going on in some form or another, like an echo chamber, for years and years and years. And while this was a stress test, a sort of Rahm Emanuel-esque, don't let any good crisis go to waste, right? I'm still not sure if, you know, now that we're a few months out, if the same sense of we need to fix this, we meaning those of us on Beacon Hill, still exists.
I hope that it does. And I think that in our conversations with the leadership, both of the House and Senate, and with the Senate and House chairs of the Transportation Committee, there is still that awareness that we need to fix it. And I think that for all the talk that there has been and all of the meaningful changes that have been made around the edges, our diagnosis, the panel's diagnosis, the tools that are needed to get the T back on track have not yet been handed over to any administration. And we think if the legislature gives us those tools, we're going to fix it. You know, a control board is a very serious step. But if you talk to people in Springfield, or you talk to people in Chelsea, or you talk to people in Lawrence whose schools have been going through these processes, they will tell you that it takes a chronic problem that people have complained about and known about but been unable to tackle, and it creates a sense of ongoing urgency and focus and discipline that actually has been proven to make a difference. And that's why we're so focused on that fiscal control board, because it is a proven tool for taking a dysfunctional organization that is critically important, a public organization like a city or a school system, and actually turning it around.
Secretary Pollack, I'd love to ask you about the prospect of a possible Olympics in Boston and what it might do to transportation. And I know that the Baker administration is sort of neutral on the Olympic issue, and I'm not asking you, do you favor it? But my question to you, as someone who lives and breathes transportation and has done for so long, thinking about the possibility of a Boston Olympics, doesn't that just sort of make you almost hunger for the possibility, given what it could mean to improving transportation in the state?
So the deadlines do help folks, right? And the truth is, I would love to have our transportation system on a solid management and financial footing by 2024, whether or not we had the Olympics here, right? We shouldn't need the Olympics to give us the impetus to do that. That said, whether we have the Olympics or we don't have the Olympics, we have to be serious about the transportation investments because, you know, unfortunately, at the end of the day, if you hold the Olympics and you don't make the investments on the transportation side, you can still hold an Olympics, right? If you're running out of time and money, you have to build the venues and you have to build the athletes' village, and you can always run shuttle buses. And that's what happened, for example, with the World Cup in Rio, where there were a lot of commitments made to transportation. And when time and money ran short, they set the transportation aside because you have to build the stadium, right? Mm-hmm. So we as an administration are waiting for the Olympic plan to come out, and when it does, we will take a look at it and we will see if it makes sense. I don't think that the Olympics automatically solve our transportation problems, and I don't think they automatically exacerbate our transportation problems. It's our job to fix the transportation system.
by 2024 or before that if we can, whether or not we have an Olympics.
So you don't necessarily buy the proponents of the Olympics. One of the things they say is that it would compel the state and the city to really get serious about fixing up their transportation system. You don't necessarily buy that.
Shame on us if the only reason that we're willing to have the political will to fix the transportation system is the Olympics, when every single day we are leaving people on platforms. We are making it hard for workers to get to work and students to get to school. If that isn't compelling enough to get us to fix it today, then Olympics, you know, a decade from now aren't going to be.
Listeners, we are talking with Stephanie Pollack. She is the Secretary of Transportation for the state of Massachusetts. We're going to take your calls at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet if you want at Radio Boston. And there are several people who want to talk with you, Secretary, so let's let them in. Brian is calling from Jamaica Plain. You're on the air, Brian. Hello, Brian? Let's move on to Newton, where Jim's calling. You're on the air, Jim.
Oh, hi. Yes, I had a question about people who don't pay fares. Now, I take the Riverside line frequently. I understand the necessity of letting people go in the rear door at certain hours because it's just too long to wait if you don't. The problem is that a lot of these people, sometimes the majority, don't come forward and pay their fare. Now, I understand that there are restrictions on what they can do with reference to if they had somebody on the train, for example, that gave people a fine. But I think they should arrange to have the fine made much higher, which I think the state legislature might have to do. Make it $50 or $100, and the word will get around that you can't do it because you're going to be in trouble. And I think that would help the T a lot on their revenue side.
Jim, thanks for your call.
So the T needs to do a better job of collecting fares, both on the rapid transit and bus system and Keolis on the commuter rail side. It's not fair to the people who do pay to let people on who don't. That said, you know, one of the best ways to make sure we collect fares is to increase the use of the monthly passes, because if the people getting on the back door have already paid for the month, we don't need to collect the money every time. But we need to do a better job. We're looking at that issue. We welcome suggestions. We're looking at what other systems do. And particularly on the commuter rail, we just need to make sure that the conductors are actually asking people for the fares. You know, on the D line that Jim was talking about, you know, the driver can't get out of their seat and deal with people who aren't doing their fares. But we got conductors on the commuter rails, and part of their job is to collect fares, and we need to make sure that's happening.
I mean, to me, it also just once again calls into mind, like, just the need for modernization, because certainly in 2015 and going forward, there have to be other ways to collect fares than just, you know, relying on people to tap their card or a conductor to find them. But I want to talk to you about modernization in general in just a minute, because before we leave sort of T finances behind us, as an issue, I did want to just ask you quickly about, of course, that north of $8 billion of debt that the T has, because the panel, the governor's special panel, in its report said, in part of the solution is for the state to relieve the T of some of that debt. Now, this is something that you have been calling for years now, you know, from when you were at the Dukakis Center at Northeastern, when you were at the Conservation Law Foundation for 17 years, as a major part of a full-blown fiscal solution for the T. So is that still, it came out of the panel's report, is that idea still alive on Beacon Hill?
So debt is a perfectly appropriate way to finance transportation infrastructure because it lasts for 30 or 40 years. As long as you know how you're going to pay the bills. And so the issue is who pays the debt service after you've issued debt. And the truth is that what the panel found is we're already giving the T more money in state assistance every year than the entire cost of all the Big Dig debt and all the debt that the T inherited when it was founded in 2000 combined. And so while we believe that the T should continue to get enough state assistance to cover the debt service costs of the remaining Big Dig projects and the remaining sort of inherited debt, they're already getting more than that. And those numbers are actually going down every year because that's all old debt that's being paid off. Most of the T's debt at this point is new debt that they have issued since 2000 not to do Big Dig related work. Mm. And that debt's the T's responsibility.
Okay, so forgive me for having a bit of a hazy moment then. Are you saying that the state should not then relieve the T of the Big Dig debt? or
so it's
should.
Not about relieving the T. It's who pays the debt service. The T is already getting enough money from the state to more than cover all the debt service on the big dig debt. And we have proposed going forward that we continue to provide that assistance to the T until it's all paid off. But people just should understand that's actually a declining amount. It's more than the T's going to get. In the next fiscal year from the state.
Okay, so has your thinking about this evolved? Because I'm looking at a 2009 Boston Globe op-ed that you wrote that you said, relieving the T of responsibility for paying off the debt is the closest thing there is to a silver bullet solution. And this was 2009, though.
But the thing is, since then, in 2009, the legislature started giving the T an extra $160 million a year, which more than covers the debt cost. In 2013, they took that annual appropriation, and they actually rolled it into the $1 billion that the T is guaranteed a year. So the truth is, the problem is not debt. At one point, debt service was approaching 30% of the T's budget.
Right.
It's now down to barely over 20% of the T's budget. That was a problem that got solved by increasing state aid to the T. Now the problem is the T's expenses are increasing faster than its revenues. And just like the rest of state government, at the end of the day, expenses can't increase faster than income.
All right, let's go back to Brian, who hopefully is on the line again from Jamaica Plain. You're on the air, Brian.
Hi, thank you. I apologize for that earlier.
That's all right. What's your thought?
My question was, what are the plans for the future to find ways to better serve our economically poor neighborhoods or more diverse neighborhoods, and then also connecting different communities and neighborhoods throughout Boston?
So the T is an important part of service for those folks, for folks in all neighborhoods and not just in Boston. The T is fundamentally a regional transportation agency. The city of Boston is actually in the middle of doing its own citywide transportation process called Go Boston 2030, and we will be a close collaborator and partner with the city as it figures out what its transportation needs are, how to improve transportation within neighborhoods, between neighborhoods, and helping folks not from the city access jobs in the city. And so that's one way that we can work together. Another way is our own service planning, looking at our existing bus routes, what their ridership is, could we do better? So a big part of what we need to be doing is planning and prioritization. And I think a part of making sure that the T can deliver the service it does every day is that the Massachusetts Department of Transportation, which I head, can play a critical role in doing that kind of planning and data analysis and collaborating with the city of Boston and the city of Cambridge and the city of Somerville and let the T focus on running service.
Brian, thanks so much for your call. Let's go to Brookline, or Kathy's calling. You're on the air, Kathy.
Thank you. I realize that, you know, fixing the T is an important issue for any major city. But it feels, to those of us who don't use the T, that all the energy is being sucked out of the room by discussions about the T, and basic road and bridge infrastructure is left wanting. We've had a bridge out in our town that's the state's responsibility to repair for 2 years now, and the bid hasn't even gone out. How do the rest of us feel? How do you make the rest of us feel like our needs are being heard too?
So I actually agree with you. Sometimes people don't even realize that as Secretary of Transportation, I'm just one of seven people on the MBTA board. I don't run the T. It has its own CEO. My job is actually what you're talking about. And one of the reasons that we want this fiscal control board, quite frankly, is so that that board does the day-to-day work of getting the T fixed, and we can do the other work. Your town, there's now 24 bridges in Massachusetts that have been closed because they are no longer safe for people to travel on. And we have lots of other bridges that are either structurally deficient or functionally obsolete, which means we haven't closed them yet, but they're not in good shape. And we are trying to get more money directed towards basic preventive maintenance and towards addressing those on the Massachusetts Department of Transportation side. So you're absolutely right. We need to be held accountable mm-hmm. for fixing the roads and bridges as well. And the tea. You may be reading more about the tea in the newspaper, but I can assure you that inside the transportation building, we think about the roads and bridges and are working on them and are figuring out how to find the resources to invest in them every day.
So can we talk about this issue a little bit more? Because, you know, one of the things that has been tumbling through my mind all day is that when Governor Baker named you as transportation secretary, a lot of people in the world of transit and transportation in Massachusetts said, this is a fantastic choice. I mean, because you have been so knowledgeable about the challenges that Massachusetts faces for so long. I mean, I kind of went through your CV a little bit earlier, but it's worth repeating. I mean, you were at that Northeastern's Dukakis Center. You were in the leadership positions at the Conservation Law Foundation during a lot of the time when CLF was doing advocacy on behalf of transit riders. You've written any number of reports on what Massachusetts needs to do to make its transportation system worthy of the 21st century. So people were very excited about you taking a leadership position in government. I'm wondering, now that you're here as Secretary of Transportation, are there obstacles towards meeting our 21st century needs that you can see now as a member of government that you didn't necessarily see before being outside?
One of those, I don't want to call it an obstacle, but it's a challenge that requires a culture change, not just at MassDOT, but actually in the whole transportation sector, is, you know, transportation folks think that they're in the business of transportation. We're actually in the business of economic development and helping cities and towns and improving people's quality of life, right? What we learned this winter is a day that your transportation system is not working is a bad day, the whole day. And a day that it is, actually many days, is a good day. And so people in the transportation universe think that transportation is important for what it is, that it's about roads and bridges and car, you know, train cars and buses. It's actually important for what it does. And so the challenge for someone like me, who sees transportation through that lens, who thinks that I'm part of the economic development team in the Baker administration, because we are, is to get people in transportation to understand that which services we provide and which projects we invest in are fundamentally about making all the other things possible. And
but what about what about the other way? What if I held the mirror up to lawmakers? Do they see transportation as economic development?
Absolutely. You know, pretty much, if not daily, then weekly, folks come to me, mayors come to me, regional planning agencies, city councilors, select boards. And when they talk about what the transportation, what they want, whether it's a service or an investment, they always frame it in terms of, we need this to support a residential housing development. We need this because we want more housing in our community. We need this because there's this piece of land where we want to build a medical office building, and right now that intersection isn't working. They always talk about transportation, local officials.
Local, but at the state level, it seems so sclerotic to me. I mean, there's just this constant ongoing battle to shake loose funds or manpower or brain power to put some real permanent fixes in place.
Well, I think there's two things that are hard. And I think that the legislature is well-intentioned and a lot of people have worked very hard. But the two things that are hard are this. One is that transportation works and fails as a system. And the legislature tends to look at transportation individual projects. I want this project. And so the projects crowd out the actual systems thinking if you're not careful. And that's one of the things that I'm focused on. And the other thing that I think is really hard is that people want to get to the question of what's the next service we provide, what's the next project we build, because quite frankly, it's far more exciting and interesting to talk about. The notion that we build that entire system on the backs of two agencies, MassDOT and the MBTA, and that if those agencies are not set up to succeed, we can't succeed in anything else, that's tough and it's less interesting. And it's like, whatever, you go fix that. Now, can we please talk about projects? And so from the inside, what you see is this fundamental issue of getting the agencies that can be the creators and operators and managers of this 21st century system is actually the best contribution we can make to creating right. The 21st century system, independent of what individual projects we build or don't build.
So what's it going to take for that, for people to see that?
Well, I'm not sure. I think, honestly, that unfortunately the winter helps, because the winter was about the system that we have. If you assume the system we have is more or less okay, then of course you immediately turn to what's the next thing, right? And I think what we all learned this winter is before we can talk about the next thing, we have to take what we already have and we have to make it work.
Right. Well, there's one more thing I want to ask you. And this comes actually out of testimony that you gave in 2013 before the Joint Committee on Transportation on Beacon Hill. It's from your written testimony where you concluded by saying that around the world and around the country, other governments are choosing to invest and invest big in transportation. This is not a liberal or conservative, Democrat or Republican issue. The conservatives in Britain are making the largest investment in rail transportation since the Victorian era. The Tea Party supported Republican governor of Virginia recently proposed and has already signed into law a multi-billion dollar transportation investment program. The lower house in New Hampshire recently passed a 15-cent increase on the gas tax to fund unmet transportation needs. And then you conclude by saying Massachusetts cannot stay competitive regionally, nationally, or globally without making a substantial and long-term investment in creating a 21st century transportation system. I imagine that now you're Secretary of Transportation in 2015, this was 2 years ago when you gave this testimony, does the need feel as urgent as ever?
It does. And what I think I understand now more than I perhaps understood then is part of making that investment is investing in the agencies that have to deliver on that. This is a bipartisan or nonpartisan issue. If you look at what the Senate incorporated into its budget, the amendment that created the Fiscal Control Board, which is one of the linchpins of our proposed Fix the T strategy, was co-sponsored by Senator Tarr, who's the minority leader, and Senator McGee, who in addition to being the chair of the Transportation Committee, is the head of the state Democratic Party, and it passed the Senate 40-0. We have bipartisan support, but the bipartisan support that we need to get to that investment in the 21st century system has to start with investing in the agencies that have to deliver that system.
Stephanie Pollack is the Secretary of Transportation for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Secretary Pollack, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We'll be right back.